Kerry Adams, and you're listening to Kerry's Connoisseurs, coming to you from Solid Gold Podcasts. Here we talk to the movers and shakers, the drinkers, the dreamers, and all the people who make it happen in the liquor and luxury industries from around the world. Well, today I am joined by Jessica Sarvain in my podcast studio. She is a winemaker, a mom, a friend, all of those in one, and she's on an interview with me today. Jess, hi. Thank you for joining me.
Hi, Kerry. Thank you so much. And hi to everyone of you. It's a wonderful privilege to be on the show.
Well, so nice to have you. And tomorrow we're going to taste lots and lots of glasses of wine from various vintages and things, which I'm very excited about. We can talk about all of those. But I wanted to catch up with you because I love your story. It's quiet, it's under the radar, it's classy, you produce beautiful wine. Not many people know about them, unfortunately, but we'll change that. We'll send this to everybody on the planet so that they know who Jessica Sarvain is. And I keep saying Sarvain, but I'm told that it's got to be Sarvain, hey?
Yeah, well, it is originally Austrian. Apparently, there's some history in my family. My ancestor was making some either very sour or very dry wine, which is, you know, Sauerwein in German, for the Duke of Austria. And that's how he gained his title or his name. Then there was a movement of those people to Germany. So my father came from Germany. My mom's South African. And I was born in Riyadh, of all places.
Oh,
in
my
Saudi
goodness.
Arabia, so where there was no alcohol.
No, and probably still isn't. What was your family surname before he became a winemaker?
I have no idea. I mean, this was back in the 17th century, so I have no clue. But my grandfather was actually also a cellar master. He used to be a real négociant in Germany, buying grapes and wine, and then put his own label on and sell them on, which is not what I do, but something also with wine, so which is quite cool.
So the DNA runs thick and deep and long and far, and the apples or the grapes don't fall far from the vine, do they? So Jessica, you studied viticulture and oenology at Stelis and
That's
worked
it.
Where? Where did you work first off?
I started just after school, actually, in Tulbach at a little place called Montpellier. And I was quickly given an assistant winemaker's business card, which made me feel very proud, of course, at the age of 18 with no experience in wine. And a bit nervous, of course. But it was fantastic.
Actually, it's a lovely little farm, Montpellier.
And, you know, what was quite exciting about it was that I had to spend, you know, late nights climbing up rickety ladders with yeast buckets filled to the brim all by myself. And I think that adventure and that excitement of galloping on horseback through the vineyards really gave me the understanding of what this industry was going to be all about. And I wanted to make that adventure my life. So I then proceeded to doing a gap year overseas and traveling to France, working in Châteauneuf-du-Pape and Baume de Venise. And then I traveled a little bit as well. And I came back to start my studies at Stellenbosch University, which was quite difficult for me because I didn't know much science at school. So I had to learn the language of science. I was more of a language and art person at the time. But it was incredible. I mean, once I had the ability to understand science, you know, it just opened up a world of information and fascination with nature. And to be able to make something from nature that people can enjoy, like this product that we work with, was such a treat. So I pursued it for 4 years. And then I started working already during my studies at Bouchard Findlayson, which was a great privilege, working under Peter Findlayson, who, you know, as we know, is sort of the father of Pinot Noir in South Africa.
One of the masters,
and of course, that was sort of where my interest for Pinot came from as well.
So did you know when you were little that you wanted to be a winemaker, or did that just happen organically when you started working at Montpellier? How did it happen?
So I think my parents, you know, they were always bitten by the wine bug. My mom used to haul suitcases of wine back to Germany from South Africa when she'd visited her family here. And, you know, she would always open a bottle of wine ceremoniously with my dad. And then my sister was quite a lot older, so she was eventually the one bringing wonderful bottles of wine home for Sunday lunches. And I was quite young, but I was allowed to already have a little antique wine glass with every Sunday meal. And it just,
And
you know, really caught my attention.
I suppose that sparked the interest and love for Riesling, which you do so well.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the grape, and we've always been introduced to it because of our German heritage, of course. And then in 2016, I traveled with Roland to Germany, and we visited 5 of the 11 winemaking regions there. And the Mosel was just, for me, such a treat. You know,
It's so
so
beautiful,
beautiful and
isn't
such
it?
incredible wines. The wines tasted like sunshine, you know, in the glass, and that in, you know, cold gray Germany. was
I
quite a treat for
know
me. So no, absolutely.
it's amazing, those Rieslings, and some of them the most expensive white wines in the world that people don't really ever get the privilege of tasting because they're just so sought after and so difficult to get hold of. But they are, if you can make a beautiful Riesling, you're certainly selling Rolls Royces, because that's
Yeah.
what Riesling is. If you get
And
it
you
right, it's the Rolls Royce.
And when you walk in those vineyards in Germany, you know, that are built at such an angle and they're so steep, you really marvel at human ingenuity, because you can hardly even walk in those vineyards, let alone pick grapes and, you know, carry heavy crates. So it's always just
I
fascinating
know.
to see how
And
these vineyards can produce.
never mind pick and walk. What about planting them and actually
Exactly.
tending those vineyards? You know, you can't put equipment or implements or anything there, can you? It's just crazy. And sort
Everything's
of
done by
dotted around
hand.
in amongst
Exactly.
everything by hand, which I think is why they're so beautiful, to be honest. And then, of course,
Agreed.
the odd gorgeous castle sort of lobbed in between all of those. It is one of the most magnificent wine lands in the world, I think. So we know where the love of Riesling comes from. And then, of course, you mentioned that you were sort of working under my darling Piet Finlayson, who is just one of my Pinot Noir princes. I mean, he really has made such big inroads and such huge contributions to Pinot Noir in South Africa. Lucky you, how did you get that job?
Absolutely. I was just lucky one day. My mom said, "You must go visit this place. You know, Sean Connery is working there, and you must go and meet
He
this man.
does
He's
look
fascinating."
yes.
And so I thought, okay, well, let me take a trip. And I took a trip with my girlfriend. At the time, she was doing BSc as well. And I managed to get a holiday job for just a couple of weeks during my 3rd year in the vineyard. And at the time, Teresa de Villiers was the winemaker there. So it really spoke to me that there was also a woman in wine. And it was quite inspiring, because a lot of the male fraternity at the time was not very encouraging about joining the wine industry, which can be such a physically taxing
Speak
job
to
at
me. I
times.
mean, I think that I was one of the first females in the South African wine industry, not the only,
That's right.
but one of the first. And I have to say, everybody's quite sort of, they have quite strange memories of that. I have fabulous memories of my wine industry. The boys were so accommodating and they were so all embracing and they helped and they've been amazing. But it really was a male-dominated industry in South Africa. Of that, there is absolutely no doubt. But they were nice. They were really nice. At that time, there weren't many lady winemakers. I think Norma Ratcliffe was probably the only female winemaker when I came back from England.
Amazing, yeah.
And thankfully, there are lots more of you now. But it was just never considered a female occupation, you know. So it's really nice to see lots and lots of you girls hiding around, wandering around in cellars and vineyards and things. It's fabulous. It's just what it should be. So you left
Yeah.
there, and well, what happened? Did you meet that ghastly rascal Roland Pence and marry him and decide to buy a farm? Well, what happened?
So that
What
was actually,
happened?
yeah, I met him at Bushveld Finlayson, actually. One day he was taking around an important wine critic, Neil Martin, and I wasn't sure who was who. And I thought the one was very handsome, and I hoped that that was not the one from the UK.
You should have married
And that
Neil
happened
Martin.
to
You would
be
have been much wealthier.
nonsense.
Don't
No,
tell him we said that, though.
we've had an amazing journey, I must say. It's been incredible to share such passion with, you know, with my partner about wine, and be able to fulfill our dream, which is to, you know, live on a farm and to be able to derive a lot of our produce from our own property and to live a little bit more sustainably and to plant a vineyard. I mean, what an incredible opportunity, and to have a little boutique
I
center.
Know, it all just sort of seemed to fit. I must admit, at some stage I had almost given up on Roland. I thought that he was going to be wayward for the rest of his life. And then along came Jessica, and he turned into a really sensible, suitable sort of chap. I don't really know what you did to him, but there it is. And now you're happily on Waterfall Farm. It wasn't a wine farm when you bought it, was it?
No, it was actually just a beautiful property that had been looked after wonderfully by the previous owner. He planted a whole lot of trees and farmed a small patch of organic vegetables. And he had in mind to possibly play around and make some wine. And therefore, he built this massive barn, which he didn't really use for much. But I think he realized that it was going to take too much energy to make his own wine. So he just had this gorgeous barn there. And it was like a plug and fit for us. It was actually friends of friends who owned this property. And we decided, well, there we go. The barn is going to be the cellar. And all we needed to do is close up some of the windows on the sun-facing side and put in a ceiling and put in a strip drain in the floor and then equip it with all the cellar equipment. And that all came together really nicely. So now we've got our cellar on site.
A few million rand later,
useful.
You make it sound so easy. But a few million bucks later and about
yeah,
2 years
to be
worth of hard graft. Yes.
Yeah. And
so
now the first vineyard poles are going in.
That's what I was about to ask you. Have you started planting?
So we planned to plant, you know, in the first year, second year we arrived here, we're like, okay, next year we'll plant. And then we were hit by three very, very wet, rainy years where we didn't have access anymore to the site that we'd selected. We put in a cutoff drain, but that didn't really help much. It didn't maybe help that we also were taking down about a hectare of lugum trees to help the landscape recover a bit. But of course that's, you know, led to more influx of water. So now we've just basically swung our sights onto the best soils of the farm, which are on less of a slope as well on the other side of the forest. And we're going to be planting a hectare of Pinot this year in September, two different clones and on a trellis system, which is going to be farmed regeneratively with the use of animals and cover crops, etc. And it's all going to be organic, which is, you know, the future in our mind. Yeah,
I know. I can't wait to speak to you tomorrow when I see you actually in real life, because
me too.
I've got
yes.
something with you that you need to know about. You absolutely need
okay,
to know about.
Awesome.
It's a project that I'm busy working on, which is a soil regenerative sort of project that I'm doing. And the
Amazing.
Industry has, the whole industry has to have it. It's brilliant. It's going to change the face of our wine industry. Not only wine, everything.
That's very
it's just,
exciting.
It's an amazing organic thing. So remind me to speak to you about that tomorrow. So currently
Super.
You're planting your first Pinot vineyard on your place, which is just for everybody's edification. It's just outside Stanford, is it?
That's right. Yeah, it's just about 8 km on the gravel road that follows the Stanford mountain range along towards Caledon. So it's called the Kleiner Viersbach Mountain. And Roland happens to be chairman of the conservancy, in fact. It's a really pristine nature that
yes,
we have
of course
had out
he
here.
Is.
No wonder that, you know, Grootbos Nature Reserve identified this area years ago and has, you know, as a result, made the most incredible place to visit. We've also just got
yes.
the shark diving, you know, down the road. So it's an incredible place. And the Stanford is developing into a really picturesque little village with lots of attractions. We also have lots of investment in farms nearby, which is exciting. Even a couple from Pretoria has bought a property just a few farms up the road from us and has planted a hectare of grapes as well. So
really
nice to see.
So
yeah.
what are the soils? What's the major sort of soil type in and around
okay,
your
so,
farm?
Okay, so it's more, you know, as you move further away from Hermanus or from the Hermann Ader, you get more marginal soils, right? But with pockets of
yes.
a little bit of Bockefeldt shale, which always offers a little bit more clay component, which is, of course, mineral rich and therefore can lend itself to planting some successful red wines. Because for red wines, you do need a little bit more structure in the soil. To be able to produce, you know, a richer style of red. If you're looking for a light style, then the sandier soils are all right, but you do need to have irrigation. And that's, of course, not always possible, depending
possible.
On your water
Yeah.
on the farm. So we're just very very fortunate that we found a property which we could live on, farm on, and have a cellar on. You know, it's not always a given that you have that, and then to have enough water to sustain whatever you want to grow. Yeah, the soils are a mix. I mean, we are in the valley. So, you know, higher up, we got Table Mountain sandstone, and then through our property runs a fault line, which then transitions to Rockefeller shale. More sort of sandier soils, and then some clay-rich soil. So we've been fortunate. We have quite an interesting pocket of soil on the other side of the farm, which is, you know, yellow and red clays. So some high to medium potential, but there are also lots of sandier patches, which we probably won't tackle until, you know, we absolutely need to.
Well, I've got the mooty. I've got just the mooty for you that you're going to put into that soil, and you'll see.
Brilliant.
In a year or two, you'll be swimming. Jess, tell me, so the grapes that you're getting for your current wines, because you've got four wines that I know of, two Rieslings and two Pinot Noirs, is that correct?
It's just one Riesling and two Pinots, yeah. So I do harvest grapes from different vineyards for the Riesling, but it's just the one, the Chi Riesling that I produce.
Oh, is it just the one? I know that you had two sites, and I thought you
bottled them
independently of one another.
No, they go into the same cuvée. So the Riesling is really just an expression of, you know, the top cool climate sites of Riesling in the Western Cape. But, I mean, it's all South Coast labeled. So the origin is Elgin and Hielmoenaarde.
Riesling.
Okay, so
that
the Chi Riesling.
What clones?
So the Chi Riesling is... No problem. It's made in a floral, fruity style, and it's also slightly off dry. So I stop the fermentation when there's just a touch of residual sugar left, something like 10 grams of sugar. And the clones are the sort of the traditional clones, 110. I don't know if that says anything to you know. And
yeah, it does, not to most of the community, but that sounds gorgeous. And I love that they're a little bit... They're a little bit sweeter than those terribly dry ones. We used to have... I think what we called Cape Riesling here.
That's which right. Was, yeah, that wasn't the real Riesling.
You needed to get, it's given Riesling a very bad reputation in South Africa, and you needed to get somebody else to take the first sip for you. You know, it was terrible. so you make one and it's called Chi. Who's Chi?
Yeah, So the Chi Riesling is made from the Weisse Riesling grape, which is the traditional German Riesling grape. Mm. And Chi is basically stands for life force and energy. It also stands for Chiyota, which is this ancient African rain god. And in 2018, when I made my first vintage of the Riesling, all the fruit came from Elgin at the time. And Elgin was actually there to save the Western Cape from the drought, because we had actually just bought a house near Stellenbosch. And it was unbelievable how we just planted 24 fruit trees and now we had to use only buckets to water because there was such bad drought.
Elgin,
because Elgin has always got a lot of water, even in a drought situation. Mm. It was able to open the floodgates and save the Western Cape from having to queue for water. So I thought it would make sense to talk about Elgin and how it's always overcast and there's always a bit of rain. You know, it just indicates what a different climate it has, even compared to Hermanus and Stanford. It's a really cool climate. Yes. And that's perfect for the ripening of Riesling, because Riesling, you know, traditionally is actually quite a resistant variety to rot. For example, you know, the canopy, it withstands rot quite well. As winemaker, you always worry about rot because, you know, it can decrease the quality of your grapes. But the reason for that is that Riesling actually has to hang the longest. You know, it's the grape that I take in the last. So when the guys in the Swartland are done harvesting for 2 months already, they've finished, they've forgotten about harvest, I'm just starting with a Riesling. You know, it needs to be, the grapes need to be really yellow. They need to look like they've been kissed by the sun.
100%. But we do work quite. And it's so gorgeous. I'm waiting for you to have some Botrytis in your Riesling vineyard, and I want you to make me a sticky Riesling, please.
Ooh, I would love that one day, absolutely. I might just have to plant
my own
vineyard.
Can you imagine how gorgeous?
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
So we've got the Chi Riesling, which honestly is completely delicious. Anybody who's not familiar with Riesling, with real Riesling, because we had... As I say, a bit of a false start in South Africa. Everybody thought they were drinking Riesling, and they weren't. They were drinking something else.
And but, it was really sweet. Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, it was. I think it was chapterized as well. Quite a lot of it was chapterized. It was just not really to be recommended. So forget that, guys. Forget all about your history in your head of South African Riesling, and go and buy yourself some Chi. You won't be sorry. Then we move on to Nom, which we love. We love Nom. Who's Nom? Nom sounds like a yoga. What do you call those things when a mantra?
Mantra. Yeah. So I have two wines, just to make it a little confusing. I've named them very similarly. The one is called Nom.
Nom and Om.
And the other one is called Om. And Om is really the yogi word, or at least the word that starts to initiate really positive vibration when you say it. Om. Yes. It just helps your diaphragm vibrate. And in doing that, it relaxes your nervous system. So it's really a great practice. You can even do it while you're drinking the wine. You know,
I was going to say it's much easier to just happier. Drink a bottle of wine and you've completely relaxed without even saying a word.
So the Om Pinot comes from the Hemel Arder Ridge appellation, but you asked about the Nom. The Nom Pinot comes from the Elandskloof, and Nom stands for Nom Kubulwane, which is an ancient Zulu goddess that the ladies prayed to by climbing to the higher lying hillsides to feel closer to the goddess. And she was responsible for beer brewing, fertility, agriculture, etc. And I just thought it would be great to talk a bit about African folklore. That was my first wine that I started with in 2015. And, you know, the site where it comes from is just so magical. It's it lies at 700 meters above sea level, which is significant altitude for a vineyard because, you know, the daytime gets nice and warm, but the nights chill down so significantly. And I was actually very fortunate because I worked in this vineyard when I worked for Peter Finlayson at Bouchard, helping establish the vineyard in 2008. And I remember driving away from that site thinking, my goodness, if only I could ever make my own wine, it would have to be from a vineyard like this, you know, which is at such a unique spot. I mean, you drive past these apple orchards that are hanging heavy with apples. You drive past the brambles. They sort of scratch your car. You know, you finally get to the top of this hillside. And here is this massive vineyard, which actually looks like table grapes from a distance. But then you go closer to these vines and you have to sort of find the little bunches, you know, and often they have mélérandage, which is like a bit of a problem for the farmer because it results in very, very tiny grapes. But for me, of course, it's excellent because you have a higher skin to juice ratio. So you have much more density, you know, much more concentration in the wine.
It's lovely. Mm. Mm.
But the vineyard is really special. Yeah.
So do you lease those vineyards, or do you just lay claim to them every year and say they're mine?
So it's an interesting story because Peter Finlayson has had a long-standing relationship with Johan, who is the owner of Kaimansrad Farm. He had his son in mind when he wanted to establish those Pinot vineyards. And in 2014, I went to see Peter Allen. He was doing a young gun stint with Wine Cellar. And he came up to me at the end of the function. He said, you know, Jess, you've always wanted to make some Pinot. Do you want to have a ton of those grapes? Because he was obviously sort of the custodian of the vineyard, even though it was owned by Johan. So at that point, I you know, I said to him, wow, of course, you know, how could I not make my own wine now?
Who doesn't want those grapes?
I've been looking after the vineyard sort of hand in hand with the farmer now, you know, helping where I could with the pruning practices and the summer canopy management and all that. And because he's traditionally an apple farmer, you know, he's got his hands full with apples and that's really the main income. And then the vineyards are sort of more secondary to him. So it's been a really great road to travel with him. He's a really lovely guy, wonderful family. His daughter's actually also studied winemaking, and that's really positive. So I still get grapes from there, but I have a certain rose that are my rose that I pick from every year. And that's just the two clones, 667 and 115. It works out really well. And there's at the moment only four winemakers who are able to receive grapes from that site. It really is a very aspirational site.
Well, you know, I always laughed so much because I love Chardonnay as a white variety. Yes. It's my favorite white varietal. And every Chardonnay that I came across when I first got back to South Africa, they said very proudly that the grapes came from the Kaimansgat area or Kaimansgat vineyard. I said to Solly at the time, how big is this Kaiman's Gat space? Every single farm, I think it's every farmer's dream to have grapes from that sort of area. And of course, it's Johann Rupert's farm, and he's done so much for the industry that we all have to sort of bow down and say thank you to. But it is one of my absolutely favorite sites for Burgundy grapes. There's no
Yeah,
matching
it's
it as far as
amazing.
I'm concerned. It's just
Absolutely.
beautiful. So you're very lucky. So you make Nom from there, and then where does Om come from?
So comes from a farm which is the very furthest farm in the Hemel Hempstead Ridge Appellation, just above Creation. And it's an incredible spot because it's farmed by Shane Mullis, who married into the family as a viticulturist and has, his greatest passion is to farm for soil health. And so he's really tackling this, as quickly as he can, just converting things to a bit more of a holistic approach in the vineyard. And they are grape sellers. So they work to they make a beautiful bubbles from their Pinot, and they make some other wines which are fantastic, and then the rest of the grapes they sell. And I've been fortunate to have this working relationship now since the beginning, since he actually started in 2018. And these vineyards are dryland vineyards, the Pinot vineyards that I get the grapes from. And they're also right next to a conservation or next to a mountain reserve, basically, So each one of the vineyard sites I work with are located right next to a nature reserve. And that brings a huge ingress of
Oh, perfect.
biodiversity into the vineyards, which is fantastic. It also comes with its challenges, of course, but in this case, it's just a benefit. And I find that the Hemel Hempstead Ridge Pinot is very classic expression of Pinot. It's quite structured on the palate. It's got a whole array of aromatics, not only red berry fruit, but it's got this sort of fynbos character, what we refer to as a
I was going to
wild herb
say it's got a
character.
f it does have that fynbos. I love it. It's beautiful.
And as it
It's
ages, it
he
has a
it's
little bit of
heathery,
a,
isn't it?
yes, heathery. That's a lovely description. Yeah. And then a little bit more of that mushroom, forest floor character develops with time and bottle, and a
It's
lot of spice.
everything that Pinot should be. We always say that we shouldn't try to emulate Burgundy, and we're not trying to emulate it. We're trying to coax or seduce the South African aromatics and mouthfeels and flavors out of our particular Pinot Noir. And I do think that that proximity to our incredible fynbos kingdom that we are so privileged to have in South Africa, I think it really does
Absolutely.
just infuse. It just infuses those vineyards, and it gets into those roots, and it gets in, and it's beautiful. So that Pinot Noir, I think, has to be from that area. Well, of course, that's where Pinot Noir thrives, and that if we had appellation control, that would be our Burgundy. But it has
Yeah,
to go down on
absolutely.
record as being the best producers, or best area for Pinot Noir. It's gorgeous. You don't make lots of it, though, do you? I mean, you don't
No,
have
so
millions
the
and millions of cases of wine.
I can only access about between 3 and 5 tons of each vineyard each year. So that puts me anywhere between 3,000 and 5,000 bottles of Pinot per vineyard. My Riesling production has increased quite a lot. I started with 2,500 bottles, and I've now managed to slowly but surely over the years increase it to about 12,000 bottles. So that's quite
Oh,
significant volumes
wonderful.
at this point.
Okay, brilliant.
And that
And
was
aren't
obviously
you
also as a
vinifying?
result. Sorry, it was also as a result of Jantzens Robinson rating it as, possibly the best Riesling from South Africa. And since then, the demand has been really high. So, sorry.
Big. I'm sorry, we've got a bit of a time lag on here, Jason. You're going to have to do your magic on this podcast when Jason and I are finished. So for anybody listening, if there's a time lag and we're interrupting each other, I do apologize. But Jess, are you vinifying everything in your barn at this stage of the game?
Yeah, so the red wines are all produced here now from last year, and that's working super well. We are completely off the grid where we are, however, so we only have access to mountain water, and we produce our own electricity with some solar panels. So that's a little tricky for the big production of Riesling, which has to happen down the road at a farm called Misty Mountains. They have the most amazing stainless
Okay.
steel equipment, and for me, it just works, you know, because the Riesling is made within 2, 3 months, whereas
Yes.
the Pinot takes about a year to make. And so for me, it's perfect that I need to drive down the road for the Riesling production, and then the reds are just at home, and I can go and tend to them any time of the day or night.
I'm so proud of you. I'm not proud of Roland. You've done it all by yourself. We're not going to give him any of the credit. Although, to his credit, he's being an amazing dad at the moment, isn't he? He's looking after the children while you do your thing. And he
You
has to
know,
go and work sometimes every now and again as well. So we won't be too
no,
rude.
it's incredible, I must say. You know, having a strong partner helps a lot, and you know, not only is he also playing a great dad role, he's, you know, my support in every possible way, and he's got an incredible
Yes.
business
No,
that's
he's been
thriving,
great.
and it's great to be able to work from here. I think not many people are able to make that work, you know, to work from far away.
Well, if anybody was to describe my sort of heaven on earth, I think you and Roland might just have, you might just have got it right, actually. I think you've created heaven on earth. You're in a
Well, we're
beautiful little
trying every
space.
day,
You're
you know?
happy. You've got two beautiful children, haven't you?
Yes, I've got two
Two, or have you got
boys,
three now? Two little boys, yeah.
two little boys, 5 and 7. And I've got my nephew as well, who's 13, and he's just an angel. He's used to live in Cape Town, and he has absolutely loved being on the farm. And he's in fact become such an avid plant identifier that he was identified the other day on iNaturalist to become part of some survey group that focuses on rare and
Wonderful.
endangered species in the Fynbos kingdom. So we know a lot more now
Oh.
about all the flowers around us than we ever did.
Well,
Yeah,
that's a
it's
nice,
very
healthy
special.
thing to hear, rather than a 13-year-old who spends his life scrolling on TikTok. So that's another
Yeah.
step in the right direction to
Now you just
heaven,
give
Jessica.
yeah give people some nature, and that's you know, then you find them thriving again,
I
so
know.
that's all we need.
I know. There's no substitute. Jess, you're amazing. I love your wine. I'm so looking forward to tasting it tomorrow. Thank you very, very much for spending time with us here on Carrie's Connoisseurs. It's a big privilege. And lots of love to
Thank
all of you.
you.
Keep doing just exactly what you're doing. You've got it
Thank you so
absolutely
much,
spot on.
Carrie. Much appreciated. Thanks, listeners, as well.
Thank you.
See you. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.